The E-12 Education Committee will come to order. And we have three bills this, no, one, two, three, yeah, three bills this morning. And we'll start with Senator Sieben. Proposal in your packet, you'll see that it relates to alternative facilities bonding. And they're actually, when we were looking over the bills, there will be or is several other bills that relate to alternative bonding. So we talked about whether we should wait and look at all of the different facets of alternative facilities bonding at one time, or should we take these bills? This one was actually ready. And I think since we won't, we'll be, the action that the committee I would ask for would be to lay it on the table. But we will be coming back to alternative bonding because the other ones, the other proposals deal a little bit different facets of it. And we'll have staff kind of take a quick run through and explain what alternative facilities bonding is and which districts can participate and which ones can't. So, Mr. Nauman, can you give us a
yes, Mr. Chair and members. The alternative facilities bonding and levy program is a mechanism primarily for deferred maintenance that was originally passed, I believe, back in 1993 that allowed, it's primarily focused on the larger school districts that had large deferred maintenance needs. And you were made eligible primarily by your size. You had to have 66 kids per grade. Back then, you had to have 1.8 million square feet and an average age of about 35 years. Subsequent to that, just a couple, maybe three, 4 years ago, we've added an additional criteria that says that if you have 1.5 million square feet and 35 years of age, you qualify for that program. So there's now two criteria. I've produced a data run that is in your packet that gives the two primary criteria of building age and square footage. If you're in italics, the district is eligible. So the eligible districts are all on the first page. There are a couple of quick caveats. Back in 1999, and I'm sure this will come out as part of the conversation just due to the nature of this bill, there were two school districts that were made eligible even though that they didn't fit the criteria at the time, and that was North St. Paul and Stillwater. They were just made eligible in the 1999 K-12 bill. And in last year's bill, the Roseville School District was looking to close a building which would have dropped them out of eligibility. And we carried permanent law change that said that if a school district was eligible but then fell out of eligibility, they would continue to remain eligible. And so those are the footnotes on the data run. Mr. Chairman, this program used to be, it's still a sought-after designation, but we now have the deferred maintenance program, which tends to deal with those districts that are not, they're not eligible for alternative facilities bonding. So there's sort of a networking together of these two programs. I think it's important to note that when a school district is made eligible for alternative facilities bonding aid and levy or levy and program, that they have to do a 10-year plan and for their facilities needs that and they work with the department to develop that plan. Here's what we're going to be working on. It's tuck pointing, it's replacing roofs, et cetera, et cetera. So it gives the department some oversight into what they're doing. So I think that's a quick overview. Mr. Chairman, if there's questions, I can deal with those.
Okay, and then if you could just outline the issues that we would be bringing up this year relating to alternative facilities bonding.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the legislation that's been introduced take kind of, I believe, three different approaches. One, the bill that's in front of you today is similar to the bills that were considered back in the 1999 legislation, where a school district is just made eligible. Today, we're talking about the Hastings School District. Back then, it was Stillwater and North St. Paul Maplewood. Notwithstanding the permanent statute criteria, these districts are made eligible. There, I believe, is a Senator Bonhoff bill that you will hear later that changes the criteria to be 1.5 million square feet and 15 years of average age. So it just lowers the line instead of that two-tiered criteria where you've got 1.8 and 15 and 1.5 and 35. It just says it takes the low year and the low square foot and has that be the where the line is drawn. So we would return to a single line, but at lower years and lower square feet. And then the final bill, I think, is a Senator Rosen bill, which eliminates all criteria altogether and just says everyone can be in the program.
Okay.
So I think those are the three approaches you're looking at this session.
All right. And Senator Sieben, good morning and welcome. And your yes. Members, there is a fiscal note on the bill, but we don't have it because
it's in the packet.
Okay.
I don't know that she's seen. Have you?
I guess it is in your packet. So, welcome, Senator Sieben.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing us. Thank you for taking the time to consider today Senate File 142. This legislation would attempt to address current challenges facing the Hastings School District, which is District Number 200. With me today to testify are Superintendent of Schools Tim Collins and School Board Member Dan Cater. The Hastings School District, which educates approximately 5,000 students, has tried twice over the previous 15 months to pass bond referenda for basic maintenance to district buildings. Although there were well-organized attempts to pass these referenda, the measures failed. I believe, like many of the districts that you all represent, the failure was not because the community does not support its public schools. Indeed, the school district has two operating referenda currently, which will come up for renewal in the next several years. Hastings is a tight-knit community that has faced challenges similar to other districts around the state. It has struggled to pass bonding authority, and instead of playing the game of trying to meet the requirements, it has tried to best manage its facilities. I'd like to point out that the school district is a member of the Suburban East Conference. Four other districts in this conference, Roseville, South Washington County, White Bear Lake, and Stillwater, have authority to levy under their alternative facilities program. The legislature in the past has granted authority or special exemptions to districts who fall just below the line of which districts are eligible. Hastings is an efficiently run district that happens to fall below the line, which has been drawn by the legislature. I think the larger philosophical question, which I understand you may consider in future bills sponsored by Senator Rose and Senator Bonhoff, is where to draw that line. The school board is 100% behind this proposal and is willing to go to bat with the public for it. So I would respectfully ask you to consider this legislation. And with that, I'll turn it over to the Superintendent of Schools, Tim Collins.
Thank you, Senator Sieben. Mr. Collins, if you could give your name for the record, please.
Tim Collins, Chairman and committee members, thank you so much for giving your time this morning. I've been a superintendent in the state of Minnesota for 16 years. 10 of those years have been outstate, and the past 6 years have been in a suburban school district. So I recognize the needs of facilities both in the outstate and in the suburban, as well as the inner city. Definitely, I think the philosophical question, you know, I want to touch on as well. In my 6 years of being at Hastings, there's been two bond issues in the last 15 months, a bond issue 6 years ago, three operating levies. So in my 6 years, there's been three bond issues and three operating levies. And so we spend a lot of time on facility task force committees. I know strategies on committee organization, who to vote, when to vote, what year to vote. We spend a lot more time on that than we do, unfortunately, on NWEA testing and other things that impact our students. But having said that, to try to paint the picture, I provided you with four graphs. I think graphs are a quick read, and I just want to walk you through them very briefly. The first graph shows this is the capital for the Hastings School District over the past 8 years. As you can see, our capital revenue since the year 2000 has declined, as we know that costs are rising. Basically, the capital formula is a per-student formula, so if you have declining enrollment, which a lot of school districts in the state of Minnesota have, you generate less revenue, but you don't necessarily have less buildings and facilities to invest in. I get asked this a lot by our community. The next graph is, how do we spend those capital dollars? Are you efficient? Are you prudent with the money that you do receive? And if you start clockwise, I'll just go through it very quickly. The $140,000, I spread that between four elementary schools, a middle school, and a high school. So roughly about a $20,000 average for those principals to keep up with chair replacement, desk replacement, carpet replacement. Taxes, on average, that's what we have to pay for taxes for city improvements, sidewalk improvements, street improvements, etc. We're in a textbook. Every 7 years, we try to replace our textbooks, and on average, it costs $500,000 a year out of that $1 million for textbooks. The blue circle, I'm very appreciative of the fact that legislatively you gave school districts the authority to do deferred maintenance levy. I thank you so much. That money that we received and are able to levy for deferred maintenance is at least a start, and we're very appreciative of that fact. It at least allows us to do a portion of an elementary roof. On average, our elementary roofs cost $750,000 to $1 million to re-roof. So if we receive $250,000 in deferred maintenance, it will take us 4 years to do one elementary, then 4 years to do the next elementary, then 4 years to do the next elementary, but at least it's a start to put us on a cycle. Copier lease, that's what our copiers cost out of capital every year, $71,000. Energy lease, we put a new boiler in our middle school, and that's our payment for the next 12 years for that new boiler system. Fiber optic lease, we collaborated with our city and our county to do a fiber optic agreement for our infrastructure and technology. So basically the $264,000 in purple is what the Hastings School District has every year to try to keep up with roofs, tuck pointing, computers, parking lots, window replacements, etc. And so this is the picture that I paint to our public and to our board, that if they think that Hastings School Board is going to be able to keep up with maintenance, there's no way that we're going to be able to keep up with it. The next graph is what were we going to do if the bond would have passed? We tried passing two times in the last 12 to 15 months a bond issue for $12 million. On the average home in Hastings, which we have around $250,000 market value, it was going to cost $5 a month. And our community said to us, it's not the money. It's just we just can't vote yes right now. We see the needs. But when gas was approaching $4 a gallon, the tough economic times that we're in, it doesn't matter what you say to us, Tim. It doesn't matter what you say, Dan Cater. We know you need to do the roofs. We know you need to do the windows. We just cannot come and vote yes. And so basically the $12 million, almost as you go to the elementary sites, $750,000 to $1 million was for roofs, probably $400,000 at each site for tuck pointing. It basically came down to roofs, tuck pointing, windows. And then at our elementary sites, we're going to try to redesign all of our elementary sites so that if you as a parent came in, a grandparent or myself, when you came in that front entrance, you'd come through the front door and you would have to walk through the office at that site. The only way you could get in the building was to go through the office. And there was a price tag of about $250,000 to $300,000 at each site. So that is the core of what we were asking for, about $12 million. Mainly to do those projects at about $5 a month to our taxpayer. And then I understand, as you've already been educated on the fact that we don't qualify. We are further away from the line on square footage and age of buildings in other school districts. I recognize that. But when I meet with other superintendents in our conference, and they don't have to be doing task force to go out for bond issues, and they don't have to do votes on bond issues, it makes it tougher and tougher for the Hastings School District because in 2011, we're going to have to renew our operating levy of 2003. In 2013, we're going to have to renew our operating levy of 2013. And so now when do we go for a bond issue at the same time? It's becoming more and more difficult to get these issues passed. So I realize other schools in the state of Minnesota then would come to you, too, and say, well, if it's good for Hastings, then it's good for us, too, and I recognize that. But, I'm here today to ask and answer any questions that you might have on what can be done to help us with this situation. Tonight we're going to, Dan sits on our facility task force. Tonight we'll be in a three-hour meeting with 18 members from our community. And I think when the facility task force is completed 3 months from now, they're going to say, we need to do roofs, we need to do tuck pointing, and we need to do windows. Another thing that the Hastings School District, we've closed buildings in my 5 to 6 years that I've been there. We could have just mothballed that building to try and work towards the square footage in this age. We closed a building that was built in 1950. So if I wanted to help our average age requirement, I could have told the board, let's just mothball that building because it'll help us here. Keep the square footage because it'll help us here. But I told board members that we don't want to get into playing that game of keeping buildings when we should be closing them and running our school district more efficiently. I also know that a building kept in a community can become not only a sore eye, but it can become political discussion 5 years later and 7 years later. So I recognize the importance of getting rid of that building, too. So I thank you for any consideration. I thank Senator Sieben for at least bringing it forward. And I recognize that you have tough decisions to make this legislative session as well. And I'll stop at that point if there's any questions you have.
Okay. We do have some questions. One, this isn't so much a question, but I just want to kind of reiterate one point that you made, Superintendent, is that when you go to the voters, and obviously you're going to the voters quite often for approval, that you mentioned that it's not necessarily the amount that the voters need to come up with. It's somehow seemed to allude that it's just the fact that you have to get approval, and it's the repetition that seems to be causing the voters to get tired, so to speak. And that's an interesting point. And I think that's it kind of connects with the fact that we've heard, the referendums are creating divisions out there in districts, and it's a it's this kind of constant kind of barrage of the voters having to give you approval that causes a lot of the trouble. Anyway, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Superintendent, if you I'm thinking about the policy issue that we're going to be dealing with as to whether you open it up for everybody. If you didn't have to consolidate all of this into one big bond issue, would this be spread over a different amount of time? How would that affect how you would what kind of decisions the board would make relative to bonding? Is it cheaper to bond a big hunk and go from there, or would there be a more methodical capital plan done in terms of these improvements that could possibly even lighten the $5 a month load on the residents as they protect the investment that they have paid for already by their taxes?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, a very good question. I think right now where Hastings is at, because as you can tell by the graph that we have not been able to spend much money on reinvesting, I think at this point we would have to do some bonding to get caught up. But then the ability to do a levy on an annual basis is much more efficient, in my opinion. The only time that I believe that bonding might be more efficient and prudent from a financial standpoint is the situation that we're in right now. If I were to say for right now at this point in time, bonding with what I believe construction cost estimates are going to be this summer and next summer with the way the economy is, bonding right now might be more prudent. But from a long-term approach, I believe that the ability to levy and slowly approach doing roofs, slowly approach doing tuck pointing at a time when you need to do it is much more prudent. The Hastings School District, if given this authority, there is no way that I would advise the board then to immediately go out and bond for this $12 million. Our community would say, look, we voted no twice on that. You went and got legislative authority, and now you slammed it down our throats. And so I would advise the board to probably, if we were given the authority, to bond for $4 to $5 million to do our roofs first, and then over time bond with a plan, as was outlined earlier with the Department of Education, say that over the next 10 years we're going to do this, this, and this.
Thank you.
Any other questions? And we have a member of the school board, is it Dan, Mr. Carter?
Dan Cater.
Yeah, okay.
Really, all the points are covered by Senator Sieben and Superintendent
Tim Collins. I'm sorry, Dan, if you could give your name for the record, please.
Dan Cater, school board member.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that, Mr. Chair, Senator Remmel, that's a good point. I mean, as a school board member, I would love to ask the community. Well, Senator Olson, I'm sorry. I was reading the nameplate there. I would love to ask the community for what we would need to do over the next couple of years. But in the current environment, you know, we have to ask for a lot to do a lot because we can't be asking every year for another bond. And Mr. Chair, you're on to some of the voter fatigue that's already occurring. I'm really, really fearful of what's going to happen when we need to renew the operating levies if we're continuously asking for bonds before that. The community is basically forming a habit of being able to say no to education now. And they're fatigued with the votes.
Okay.
It was, Mr. Chair,
Senator Olson.
It's interesting because it's a struggle that I both hear and feel, and I'm sure some of the others of you do too. One of my cities is wanting to build a whole campus, essentially, of new facilities, of new police building and new public works and expansion of the city hall. It's not a really very big community, but it's raised a bit of ire. Some people said, well, people aren't going to go for that. I said, what makes you think that you're going to have a chance to vote on it? And they said, we're not. And cities have the power to become like an economic development authority. This city doesn't have any economic development in it, but it can become an economic development authority, and the same council can vote to bond and lease then to the city and avoid a referendum. And it doesn't sit real well. It doesn't sit real well with people, but they have that authority. And school districts, you know, having to go back even to maintain, you know, to get enough money to maintain the buildings and the investment they have, there's something that's a little bit amiss here. Now, I think we've opened the door too much on the city side. There's some things that I think that people need to have a say in, particularly in building new facilities, but the maintenance of what you have. I think we ought to really be looking very closely at that. I don't know if there's some reason to believe that districts would go hog wild with that levy authority or not, because the property tax is a sensitive issue, as you all know. But I think we ought to be looking very seriously at this, because I think we have we've not been equitable in the way if you want to call it, tying the hands of our local officials in making decisions that are essential for the service they deliver.
Senator Olson, on the fiscal note that we have, under the long-term fiscal considerations, it talks about that there's 23 school districts with more square footage than Hastings. So I'm guessing that if this passes, we will have 23 more districts that will definitely want it, you know.
Well,
so it's
Mr. Chairman, that's why I think we ought to be looking at more either a formulaic change or opening the door if that's feasible, rather than just having to go at this one by one.
But I think
this has been instructive to hear the situation that a district is facing and to look at some individual ones. But I think to do it piecemeal is only adding to our burden and putting off delaying a decision that we ought to be considering.
It is, and that's why I mentioned before we started that I think it is up to the committee to try to figure out what plan should we go down in terms of, and we will have different proposals to look at and try to figure out what's the best approach. And I don't think Hastings is totally alone in this. I think what we've heard in the testimony on the operating referendums is that there tends to get the voter fatigue out there.
Oh, yeah.
With that constant renewal and trying to run and operate schools with referendums. So I think that somehow we do have to try to figure out a more long-term plan here. Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So does this, I know this doesn't fall under the category of mandates, but does this fall under the category of making it easier on our school districts, even, you know, with the pressure that we're going to be putting on them during this particular time? So some of these bills, anyway,
yeah,
particularly
Senator
Rosen's.
You're right. Under different plans, the mix would be under I believe that under the alternative bonding that you're asking for, it would be all local property taxes. But is it a aid levy?
It's not equalized.
Mr. Chairman, the alternative facilities bonding program is all levy for this particular district. There was a deal a few years back to offset some changes that were done in an early tax bill that allowed a couple of the larger districts to get some aid, and I think that's primarily Minneapolis and St. Paul. but in this particular case, this district would be all levy. Now, that said, currently this district, I don't believe they get any aid off the deferred maintenance, but there is an aid component to the deferred.
They do.
Okay, so there is some aid on the deferred maintenance. Another approach would be to, instead of adding on to the alternative facilities program, we have that deferred maintenance program, which is sort of an offset against, if you're not eligible for alternative facilities, you are eligible for the deferred maintenance. So another policy option for this committee to think about, to the extent that you're looking at larger policy questions on this, would be to consider an enhancement to that deferred maintenance program. And that would probably involve some state aid, depending on how it was structured, because that one is equalized.
Okay. And if I could just point out, Senator Steven, do you have the fiscal note?
Yes.
Okay. On page 2 of the fiscal note, right above the title, Long-Term Fiscal Considerations, if you look at that paragraph, it talks about the total amount of the additional annual levy authorized by this bill is estimated to be about $650,000. And then it says $800,000 in new debt service levy plus $200,000 in new pay-as-you-go levy minus $250,000 in lost deferred maintenance levy minus $100,000 in reduced health and safety levy. So, members, there's a number of factors occurring with this, and and is that kind of jive with what you...
Mr. Chair, I think what Superintendent Collins said is that if they would get this authority, they likely would not go out for a bond worth $10 million right at the onset, so that would affect the $800,000 in new debt service levy number.
All right.
If that makes sense.
Yes, it does. A couple paragraphs above that, it says a bond issue of $10 million, so okay. All right. We had some Senator Roebling and then Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering where we ever came up with these figures of square footage and age of building, and, you know, how subjective are they? And then the other question real quickly is if we get that federal stimulus money, and I don't know exactly how it's going to be doled out, but is it possible that some of that could go for projects such as new roofs that might include better insulation or some energy feature that are you just putting on a new roof and you don't need anything else but the, you know, the roof? I'm wondering about that, if we might not have some possibility there.
There is a possibility, when we're done here, I think we have some copies of the latest information on that federal stimulus that we can share with you. It's not a for sure deal. The House hasn't included in their part side of the stimulus. The Senate doesn't. So
the House has it, and the Senate doesn't.
And Mr. Chair, if I'm not mistaken, I heard from another one of my school districts that money would generally help older school districts that where their buildings are much older. That would be targeted to that, but I don't know if that's correct or not. Mr. Nauman does.
Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sieben, I think staff, just like all of you, is filtering around for as much information as possible. I'm not sure that we really have a sense of that. I've read the language. It's not as easy to read as Minnesota State Senate language. But maybe I'm more comfortable with it. My basic sense is that I don't think we know yet, and I think it's going to be important to try to keep a pulse on it as we're going, and we're certainly endeavoring to do that. But there's going to be a fair amount of consultation. I think the chair's intention is to have the Department of Education come in and speak to us about what can be used, what can't be used, sort of when the bill is signed, when we have a sense of what's, or maybe before that, once we know what's possible.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson.
That was my follow-up question, too, is what freedom the states might have, because I could see that you could, you know, we could fashion a way to get that out, doing a lot of good for a lot of places if that's the vehicle, or is it going to be done individually from the federal government to local school districts, or how are they doing that, and what kind of controls, and is there a chance of getting any influence, whether it's the conference committee or whatever else, as to what approach might be advantageous?
I had Senator Olson. I had that same question yesterday, and then I turned to our staff the answer.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, in generally, when federal funds come in, they come in either in formulaic grants or project grants. Formulaic grants are based on free and reduced lunch or something like the age of a building. The project grants have tended to be more like teacher quality enhancement is an example of a project grant. And I would imagine that a lot of the federal money coming in now would be more on the formulaic side. So it does tend to go right to local school districts, though it is, I suppose, first sent to the state education agency, MDE, and then out to the local districts. And generally, when federal funds come in, the state education agency is allowed to keep generally around 5 to 15% for administration of those.
But Mr. Senator Chair, Olson, it would seem to me that if it's for facility improvement, I'd be interested to see what the formula, if it's hopefully that's not by free and reduced price lunch. I mean, if the formula were, it would be nice if it was more criteria of both improving energy efficiency that would save the operational dollars for the schools, and some, you know, other kinds of things that would protect that infrastructure. If there was some, I think it could do a lot more good than than whatever formula the federal government can figure out. Hook up.
We should find out shortly, Senator Rummel.
Could we influence it all? That's the next question.
Well, I was going back to the other side of the question on deferred maintenance. I was wondering if Mr. Nauman could explain to us what the limitations or possibilities are for changing deferred maintenance.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Rummel, the current deferred maintenance formula works a lot like many of our equalized formulas, where we establish a dollar amount per pupil. So in Hastings' case, in declining enrollment, they're seeing reduced deferred maintenance revenue. And then it's an aid levy split calculation based on an ANTC equalizing factor of, I think, 5,900. So the wealthier you are, the more you raise off of state aid. So to the extent that you're contemplating an enhancement of that program, you could define a larger amount of revenue per pupil, and that would generate more revenue for all districts that are participating in that program. Those districts that are participating in the alternative facilities bonding program, however, would not see any benefit. So it's a way of targeting if the belief is that these districts that are not participating in this program that you're talking about today, if you want to target those districts, you could use that policy lever, which does contain an aid component. And maybe we would want to adjust the equalizing factor to ensure more aid.
That's what we could do if we could.
If you have money.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, that's Senator what we could Olson. Do if we had the flexibility with that federal stimulus money of putting more aid into a structure that would benefit, I think, more equitably.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, as you're thinking through this and as we talk about the federal stimulus money, I think it's important to recall that we're talking about 2 years of funding here from the federal government. So if you use it for a formula like that, if we were able, let's say that was an allowable use, we would drop off the table, presumably, unless the federal government continues to fund that. So I think that we need to be cautious about how that would work. In the past, this committee, when we've had one-time money, has allocated some of that money for deferred maintenance on a one-time basis, and provided an amount per pupil for all school districts to do deferred maintenance kinds of things. And we've used that. That may be an avenue that we want to think about rather than dropping it into a permanent formula. So that's an alternative.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
But on the other hand, it would also, I think, districts would hustle to get projects done that need to be done, and it actually might, in fact, serve as an economic stimulus.
Correct. Senator Folby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I just want to say I'm, 6 weeks into this and having just prior to this served as a chairperson on a school board for many years, I feel your pain. I represent 11 districts in greater Minnesota, and one is on the list. And over and over and over, people are not able to pass bonding and levy programs. And so something needs to be done. We go back, sitting around this table to talk often about student achievement. There are boards, board members, and superintendents that rarely get to student achievement because they're spending so much time on facilities bonding and levies. And I know I worked with a superintendent that I bet 90% of his time, and we did not have a curriculum director. We did not have, we were bare bones administration. So I really just want to put a plug in for, I really appreciate you coming today, Senator Sieben, and this really needs to be addressed more than just district to district.
Superintendent?
I would like to just follow up, Mr. Chair and committee members, with a few thoughts as I've been listening. I thank you for feeling our pain, because that's one of the things that I wanted to share. The voter apathy is there. It's not going away. I try to be upfront with our community saying we will be going for a bond issue now. We will be renewing our levy in 2011. We will be renewing our operating levy in 2013. Our new high school, which we'll still be calling our new high school that was built in the year 2000, we're going to have to do a bond probably in 2015 to redo the roof there, to redo the parking lot there. I'm very upfront that this isn't going away. This is the system that we operate in. My father-in-law was a superintendent for 30 years in the state of Minnesota. He had to pass one operating levy during that 30 years and one bond issue. I've already put forward all total in my 16 years, probably 8 or 10 bond issues and operating levies. So the voter apathy is there. It's not going away. I wanted to comment that the Hastings community is extremely supportive of education. I know, Mr. Chair, you've been to Hastings. You've seen our beautiful high school facilities. They did that knowing that that was coming out of their pockets. We have one of the largest operating levies now in the state of Minnesota because 6 years ago we were in statutory operating debt. So I'm coming here on behalf of a community that is extremely, extremely supportive of education. But in the last 6 to 8 months, they voted down a bond issue that would cost them $5 on the average household because, quite honestly, they've had enough. They also are starting to compare us now to the city and county. Are you a good superintendent? Are you a good board member? Why aren't you setting aside money for these roofs? Why aren't you setting aside money for these parking lots? And only when I can sit down with them personally and show this graph that these are our $1 million and this is where we're spending them, that they say, aha, I see why the board can't set aside for the roofs. I can see why they can't do the tuck pointing. When you have only $1 million, and I know that sounds like a lot of money, but in a school district our size, trying to keep up with roofs, tuck pointing, parking lots, and now this new thing that was never part of the capital formula. You know, the capital formula, I believe, was formulated 25 to 30 years ago when we didn't have technology. And we know what the costs are now for technology and technology replacements. So I appreciate you listening today. I appreciate you hearing our story, which is reflective of a lot of other stories. I think for us, the deferred maintenance, and I've been in outstate, so I've been in the rural school districts, and I understand equalization aid. I understand how important that is to Blue Earth area, Randolph, Cannon Falls, et cetera, because they don't have the tax base that I have in Hastings to keep it at only $5 a month. So I understand the importance of that. The deferred maintenance really helps us once we get caught up. It helps us keep on a plan. Our problem right now in Hastings, and I'm guessing this is probably true in quite a few other school districts, because we have not been able to reinvest in our roofs, we do need to do some bonding right now to get quite a few roofs done, get quite a few windows and some tuck pointing done. That's our situation right now. That might not be the situation in a lot of school districts, but that is our situation. The deferred maintenance levy, excellent program, because that allows me to make sure that those dollars do get targeted towards roofs, windows, and tuck pointing. But right now it's just not enough, as you heard, for us to get caught up. Our district is going to have to bond and get a bond passed to get caught up.
Okay, members, I think we have got a lot of information here. And Senator Sieben and others, I think what we would like to do or should do would be to lay this on the table for consideration as we get those other proposals on alternative bonding and deferred maintenance and other things before us, so that we can kind of put a complete picture together, so that when we do make a decision, then that we know your situation and we want to figure out a way to address that, as well as what the best long-range plan might be, too. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair, very much for your consideration,
yes,
and committee
Senator
members.
Senator Scogan, or would you?
Mr. Chair, yeah, I'd move that Senate File 142 be recommended to pass and laid on the table.
Okay. Senator Scogan moves that Senate File 142 be laid on the table for consideration.
You left out part of his motion, but I'd presume that you concurred, huh?
Yeah. We'll be coming back, and do appreciate on Senator Scogan's motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Sieben, and Mr. Collins and Mr. Cater.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Next, we have Senator Kubley. As Senator Kubley comes up, Mr. Nauman, could the one approach toward the solution of the previous bill, Senator Sieben's bill, could be a combination of all of these things that we're dealing with. As the superintendent talked about you know, maybe doing a smaller bond issue, but then move back to the deferred maintenance as a maintenance kind of a approach?
Mr. Chairman, this could be structured in a variety of different ways. Certainly, it's yours and the committee's pleasure to how we do it, and it's obviously pending legislative targets and sort of the overall solution. To the extent that you have state aid available to put towards this question, then you can begin considering enhancing the equalization.
Okay. Welcome, Senator Cooley.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Superintendent Madsen from the Dawson District and also from the Electoral Valley District sends his apologies for being unable to be here. Something came up yesterday afternoon, and he was unable to find a board member to come either. So I'm kind of on my own here today. But anyway, there is a small amendment, Mr. Chair, that they would like me to offer, and I guess I'd like to begin with that. I defer to Senator Wieger.
Oh, Mr. Chair, Senator Kubley asked if I could move to amend at line 1.8, the reference to 200,000 and insert $220,660.
Okay.
You'll speak.
Let the record reflect that there is a quorum. Or was a quorum before? We just lost a member. All right, there is a quorum. Senator Wieger moves on line 1.8 to delete 200,000 and insert $220,660. Senator Kubley?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The reason for that was that they weren't sure of the exact amount when the bill was drafted, but have since become aware of the exact figure, and since they no longer have a debt to retire, you know, it makes sense to do the entire amount as opposed to just the 200,000. But they no longer have a debt that they're working on, which you know, is a good thing from their perspective. But they would like to transfer this amount. You know, I'm sure that all of you are aware of kind of the bind that school districts are in these days, and they feel that this would be quite helpful to maintain the programs that they have in place.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Nauman?
So, Mr. Chair and members, this is a similar kind of fund transfer bill that we've seen in the past. Districts will be required when they have bonded debt to levy that extra 5% that accumulates over the course of the life of the bonds, and then absent action from the legislature and signature by the governor, this would credit back to the taxpayers as a property tax reduction in the future. Districts often come forth to us and ask for transfer. And if that transfer is granted, we would then carry that in now with the amendment, if it's added as a $221,000 levy increase on our tracking.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, could you refresh our memories as to why we have that 5% in there, and if in all cases the leftover at the end amounts to that 5%? What's the reason that we do the 5% requirement?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, the rationale for why that extra amount is levied is a protection against default on the bonds, to ensure the taxpayer or the bondholders that there is an extra amount to pay the bonds in the event that for whatever reason the district is unable to pay it. So they've got that extra cushion to do so. In all cases, no, it doesn't credit back, only when the legislature allows it to transfer over does it not.
No, Mr. Chairman, that wasn't my question. It was whether that 5% cushion is ever used for the purpose that it's intended. I mean, it's a cushion, but is there ever a need for some reason that protection is used for that purpose? Because in other words, if the if the voters are voting knowing this, because that's the law, then they have approved that that amount being raised. I'm actually, you can see my name is on this bill too, that rationalizing whether in cases where debt redemption funds have been used and completed their work on a project, whether this might be a general policy rather than an individual district thing that we ought to consider.
Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I think the way that, if Dr. Melcher has some thoughts on this, that would be helpful. But I think the way I would think about it is it's more for the bondholders than it is for the property taxpayers. Because in order to sell the bonds, there needs to be some enhanced collateralization of those bonds, and that's what that 5% is for. In terms of whether it's used for its intended purpose, I would think it would be rare, but I'm sure it has been.
Welcome, Mr. Melcher. I believe this is the first time this year.
Yes,
nice
Mr.
to
Chairman.
Have you before us.
Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. The I think the rationale for the 105% just goes to protect against people that aren't able to pay their taxes, essentially. So if the school districts has issued bonds and they were just able to levy 100% of the amount needed to make the principal and interest due, if you had one or two taxpayers in the district that were in tough financial straits and couldn't pay their property taxes, the school district wouldn't have enough money to pay the principal and interest. So the 5% is just built in as a cushion, and we always have some taxpayers that aren't able to pay their taxes. So there is some need for that 105% in law. And I should also point out that we do have a provision in law that's called a debt excess offset. So as this 5% builds up, that gets cumulative, and it can get to be a fairly significant amount of money. We do have a provision in law where if the fund balance in the school district's debt service fund gets to be too big, there is actually a levy reduction as we go during the course of the bond issue. We don't keep adding on every year, but we do allow the district to keep a fairly significant cushion just really to protect the bond rating and ensure that the district does, in fact, have the money to pay the principal and interest.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think
Senator
that
Olson?
Policy is in the taxpayers' interest, too.
Yes. So. It helps hold on the interest rates, et cetera,
yes.
as well.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions that members have? So the question that we need to deal with is, in this transfer, I think it says here where the last payment is paid this year. So this is really what's left after the last payment.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And if I understand the expenditure or revenue formula, that this is really all, there was no aid in that levy?
Mr. Chairman, I suspect when they first took out the bonds that there was some aid, but given how that formula has evolved or how inflation has affected that formula over time, that there, it's clear that it's all property tax levy now.
Okay. So, Senator Olson?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would move that the Senate File 68 be laid on the table for consideration, and that we consider elements of this as a possibility for a broad policy change.
Okay. I thought one
for
time,
some flexibility. I think there's some need for some flexibility here.
Mr. Nauman, I thought one time in previous year that we had done something to make it automatic, but
I think you might be thinking of the operating capital.
Oh, okay, that's what. So, okay. On Senator Olson's motion that this be recommended for consideration in the omnibus bill, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Okay. Thank you, Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay, Senator, the last one is Senator Koch. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members.
Morning.
Senate File 327 is a classic bill that came from the constituents. Mother approached me with an idea, and we put it down into law, or we're requesting that it be put into law. What it allows for, Mr. Chair and members, is that staff development funds may, not shall, may be used for CPR, first aid, and AED training. And with me today is Ms. Kelly Capuch, and if we could allow her to some comments on why she brought this bill forward.
Okay, thank you, Senator Cook. Ms. Capuch?
Hello.
Please give your name for the record.
My name is Kelly Capuch. I am a mother of two children that attend St. Michael Albertville Elementary, Fieldstone Elementary in St. Michael. Last year, on November 2nd, 2007, my son Brady, then a third grader, had a serious accident on the school playground. He was accidentally pushed off a slide, falling approximately 15 feet to the ground. None of the teachers who were out there had witnessed this fall, so a classmate had brought his teacher to Brady. Then the teacher had him get up and had a classmate walk him to the nurse. I received a call from the nurse's aide saying that Brady had an accident. He was okay. He was a little shook up. She wasn't sure if she should send him on the bus and wondered if I should come get him. And I said, yeah, of course, I'll come get him. So I really did expect a bad accident. I expected maybe he tripped and he got a little shook up because he was embarrassed. When I got there, he was more than shook up. Sorry, I lost my place. I knew by his actions that his conditions were worse than I expected, so I made a decision to bring him to the hospital. While at the hospital, it was brought to my attention by a nurse that an ambulance should have been called and he should have not been moved after a fall like that. Brady's accident resulted with two broken wrists, a sprained leg, and a black eye. During his recovery, many questions were brought to mind. After the accident, I did some research and discovered that the state of Minnesota does not require teachers to be CPR and first aid certified. After realizing the mistakes that were made from his accident, I questioned the safety for our kids at school. I believe that all teachers who work with children should be required first aid and CPR skills. I do believe that safety in our schools should come first. I was told that there is always someone at the school with this training. When an accident or a situation occurs, minutes, even seconds, are critical for responding. In a school classroom setting, the teacher is often the first responder. Sometimes there is no time to wait for the school nurse. The teacher, being the first responder, should know how to handle any situation. By requiring all school teachers to receive and follow up with first aid and CPR training, this will make our schools a much safer place for our children. After going through this experience, my goal is to see a state mandate requiring all teachers to be CPR and first aid certified. So I'm promoting awareness to make a change to see this happen. Brady is a very lucky boy. While having both arms in casts for 10 weeks and 2 months of physical therapy, he is now fully healed and doing well. So I present this goal of mine to all of you in hopes that we can make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I am surprised, too, but I suppose that that's quite an accident for anyone, you know, and not having some kind of treatment. Or was there a school nurse?
There was a school nurse, nurse's aide on the building. The teacher outside had a walkie-talkie. She could have called the nurse, but she just chose not to. Since none of them had seen the fall happen, when she got to him, she helped him up, but she didn't see it happen, and he, you know, he has kind of a high pain tolerance, so he wasn't, I think he was in shock at the time, so he wasn't, you know, creating a big scene or anything like that. And so then she let him pick a friend, and the friend walked him to the nurse, which was it's quite a jaunt from the playground to the nurse's station. And with a sprained leg, I don't know how he made it, because when I got there, we were not able to get him to walk at all. And, of course, the adrenaline was going and the shock set in. So I don't know how he got to the nurse's station. But the teacher, I mean, great school, great teachers. She's a second-year teacher. I just really don't think she knew exactly what to do. He wasn't carrying on a big scene, so she probably just thought it was okay to have him go. I transported him to the hospital, which was 15 minutes away, and watching him, I shouldn't have ever had to do that. He was slumped over in the back seat, just in shock. I think back now of how I transported him, and I don't know how I was able to do that, but... yes, an ambulance should have been called, at least somebody to take a look at him. I would have really appreciated that. So.
Yeah. Senator Olson. Yeah,
Mr. Chair, the bill as presented is not a mandate. It's allowing for access to using the staff development funds for this purpose. And it seems, I don't think we're too inclined to add more mandates, but, they have opening workshops for teachers, and it doesn't take a course on this. It takes, maybe you need to bring in somebody that can, with some passion, that can drive home the seriousness of the action to making some judgment that is going to jeopardize somebody else's life or health. And that's just a policy that is just good practice for all school staff to have. It doesn't require a whole course, even just to get some hopefully common sense in handling these accidents, and that's in the interest of the whole school district as well as the teachers and the ones who are the victims.
Great. Senator Polk.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, thanks for that. And we are being sensitive to the mandate issue, particularly this year. But so our hopes with this is we'd like to raise awareness. St. Michael Albertville, because of the tenaciousness of Ms. Capuch, has already moved on this issue. And I would add that we do have the support of the Red Cross and the Heart Association, who do provide volunteers, courses in this. And so that's kind of the idea here, is we're hoping to draw some attention, some awareness, and have this come from parents, teachers, and school boards.
Senator Rummel and then Senator Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a school board member, it seemed to me that MSBA had some policies on this. Have you checked the MSBA school board policies on this particular issue? I just have a feeling that this is already should already be in school district policy.
Well, I bet we have somebody here from the school districts association. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the School Boards Association, and I appreciate the mandate relief information in this and that it is in May going forward. Senator Rummel, I don't know the answer to that, but I would be happy to provide the committee with all the policies relating to this issue before the next meeting.
Ms. Kelleher, I think it's on page 995 of the manual.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
911.
What is it?
Not 996.
Well, it could be 911. It's the great big thick manual.
Thank you. I'll provide that information.
Senator Saltzman.
I guess on this, Mr. Chair, I just have a question regarding the language, because I'm reading this, and it says, and basic first aid, focusing on certification or CPR and the use of automatic external defibrillators. And I'm wondering if, to be more clear, if it would be perhaps I'm not reading this right, and basic first aid, including certification or including CPR and use of automatic external defibrillators, because I am a basic life support instructor for the American Heart Association, and a lot of times there are courses that are not technically certified, but it really allows training for like a number of people. So I just wanted to suggest that basic first aid should include that, maybe just a technical piece, but just so that someone might say it could be used for one or the other, and maybe Ms. McQuay would have some suggestions, because I'm sure someone was probably involved in writing this. But I just sort of was a little unclear to me that I think you really would like both to be included.
And so,
Senator Cook.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Saltzman, and we would be open to that if the team has some suggestions. We do want to include the option for certification, but
including
CPR certification.
Certification
and first aid,
Mr.
Chairman.
Senator
Olson. Yeah, I think Senator Saltzman makes a good point. Is it basic first aid or CPR, or do you want a series that you have basic first aid, CPR, use of automatic external defibrillators? Those are all optional. Those are all options.
We'd like to have them all be options.
And I don't know where the notion of certification best fits. With potential for certification or something to that effect.
We did. And
does basic first aid include CPR and the use of automatic external defibrillator, Senator Saltzman?
Well, I don't think that the American Heart Association offers a basic first aid course. I'm not sure about that. I know that they focus a lot on CPR and external defibrillators. So I just raise that, or could be, because basic first aid, I know that my children, when they've taken basic first aid to be camp counselors, have taken a separate course in CPR. So I'm wondering if it might be more accurate to say trying to enhance team performance.
You know, I think,
and then basic first aid and CPR, so that it's inclusive rather than one or the other, or that one would presume the other is included in the course. Just, it all depends on what kind of program, because a school might want to just do the CPR and not do the first aid. So, or else perhaps basic first aid and then CPR and the use of automatic, so that it's not grouped together.
Maybe Ms. McQuay has
An idea here.
What
do you? I do too.
Mr. Chair and members, the suggestion on 2.3 would be and basic first aid, focusing on certification, CPR, or the use of automatic external defibrillators.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Olson.
Do you suppose that or is incorrect and it should have been of certification for CPR and the use of automatic? I think you do get certified for use in CPR. And also the use of automatic external defibrillators. So maybe instead of an or, it should be for.
Mr. Chair?
Sorry, go ahead.
The way that Dr. McQuay and I had understood this when we read it in the first place is that we didn't want to change or to for, because I think as Senator Saltzman had mentioned before, you don't always necessarily get certified in CPR. It's, you know, there's also some lower levels of training that are involved, and you know, we don't want to keep this exclusive for certification only. I think in this language, when it's saying certification, we're talking about certification, CPR, and automatic external defibrillator training, that all being a part of basic first aid training.
Okay, thank you, Corey.
Well, Mr. Chair, what if we do and basic first aid, including CPR and the use of automatic external defibrillators with an option for certification, something like that?
That's more sense.
All right.
Would that be?
Yes, I think that makes more sense.
Okay, would you restate that, Senator Cole?
So the change would be, or the change would say, and first aid, including CPR and the use of automatic external defibrillators with an option for certification.
Yes.
makes it clear then. I think the concern is that not all CPR training would be certified, could just be, of course, there's an but leaves an option for certification.
Okay, one more time.
So the underlined portion would say, and basic first aid, comma, including CPR and the use of automatic external defibrillators with an option for certification. Is that two?
All right, members.
Senator Mr. Chairman, Olson. And this, these are topics to be now included that are eligible for people to use their staff development aid.
Correct, okay. Correct. And the Heart Association, that leaves the first aid, which is important, Mr. Chair, because the Heart Association doesn't do basic first aid, so that would come from another source, but of course would have been important in Ms. Capucci's case. Sure. Basic first aid would have been important training.
Senator Roblin?
Mr. Chair, thank you. When Senator Koch asked me about this bill, I was surprised that we didn't already require it. My daughter's a teacher in the Catholic school system, and they require their teachers to have this training. But I was wondering if we really wanted to ensure that teachers had it, if we should require it as a part of their licensure to start with and then still have this available for teachers. Yeah, it's refreshers.
You take that one.
Yeah.
Again, Mr. Chair, we talked about that option. That would be up to the committee. But at this point, we want, you know, we're looking to...
We don't know that it's not required.
That's right.
I thought it was
still gonna check that out. So on Senator Polk's language,
I would move the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Correct on the amendment on lines 2.3 and 2.4. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Then on that was the only amendment, I believe, to that. All right. Any other questions on that? Any other comments? Anybody else want to comment?
Mr. Chairman.
We're going to find out from the School Boards Association whether there's some information in the manual which might have an impact on this later, but for right now, we'll Senator Olson.
I want to lay it on the table. Yes, so this.
Senator Colt?
Well, Mr. Chair, that would be my question, is what is your intention for this bill, to lay it over for omnibus, or could we move forward?
Well, would it make a difference if we already had language, if the school board's manual had language in it or not? I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, this just is another topic for allowance for people to districts to use their set-aside staff development funds. So... I don't know that the policy would affect it. So,
all right.
If it's in the manual, we want to, Mr. Chair, we want to be able to use. If it's used, we have an option for these funds, Mr. Chair. So I don't know that the manual would make.
I think the motion should be laid on the table.
Okay.
Because it's actually a use of dollars, school district dollars.
It's finance. Yeah. It's related finance.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Koch, you mentioned St. Michael did take action following this. Was this revision in policy or in training, both?
Talk to what they did.
Ms. Capucci.
Basically... what they did is I don't know what funding they used, but they certified their paras and their custodial staff. So every time a teacher goes outside with a classroom, they have to take one of those paras with. And last year we were I was chaperoning a field trip with my son, and we went to this park, and they had a para there stay with all the students. While at the park as well. So I'm very pleased with the changes they had made there.
Thank you.
Okay. Did you want to move it? Or Senator Cole?
I would move then, sir, that we lay the bill over, or lay the bill on the table.
Table for consideration. On this bill, Senator Colt's motion as amended. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you very much. And members, next week we'll have the governor's bill. We do have a copy if you're interested in the latest information as of 5 or so yesterday afternoon on the economic stimulus package. So if you want to pick up a copy, we have it back here. Otherwise, we'll tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Committee is adjourned.